Today is Monday, June 22nd, 2015. The time is 11:11 a.m. I am Jamil Russell, the interviewer. The oral historian is Mr. William Kimball. This project is titled Oral Histories on Plant Closings in Milwaukee. Okay, I'd like to start by beginning by asking you, can you tell me a little bit about yourself and where were you born and your background and stuff like that?
I was born in Decatur, Alabama, to William and Charity Campbell. Mm-hmm. And shortly after I was born, they moved to Birmingham, Alabama. I spent my 5, 6, or 7 years in Birmingham. Then we moved to Milwaukee in the 40s. I don't know exactly what year, but it was early 40s because I went to 9th Street School and they put me back into the fourth grade when I got here.
Okay.
And I went to Roosevelt after that, spent a couple of years at North Division. And then I gave the Army 4 years of my life, Air Force.
Okay.
And I've been here ever since.
Do you have any children?
Yes, I have 4 boys and 1 girl.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I've heard you went to MATC College and took the
barber. I went to MATC College for barber.
Barbershop program.
Yeah, that after I got out of service, couldn't find a job nowhere because they said I didn't have a work record. I didn't understand that. Mm-hmm. You give 4 years of your life in the service and you come out. American Motors was hiring. They were hot. Mm-hmm. They were hiring. I went out there and put in I went all over putting in an application. Mm-hmm. Nobody would hire me. So me and a friend of mine, we always said when we got out of service, we'd go on into the beauty culture world.
Mm-hmm.
So then his mother opened up a shop, and he said, he wrote me a letter. I was over in France. He said, "Mom, we're going to change. We're not going to beauty college. We're going to barber college because Mom got a shop, and we're going to work for her." I said, "Okay." So after I got discharged from the service, I couldn't find a job, and I worked around doing construction work for two seasons, and I had put in an application for the city. They called me the third season. I went to work for them for 1 season. Then the school called me to come to school the 4th season. So I've been in barbering ever since.
Okay. Do you have an ambition for barbering, like doing barbershops and cutting hair? Is that what you really want to do or like to do?
I loved it. I'm still barbering, but I learned to love it. I guess I was natural for it because I stayed in business. I've been cutting hair now for over 50 years, so I must like it.
I heard you open up your own shop. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah. Like I said, I worked for Mildred Sellers. She was the first woman barber in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
She went to school, and like I said, she opened up her own shop. And her daddy worked for this guy's spot shop. And so after she opened up her shop, he went over there with her. And her son, Joe Sellers, he went to barber school before me because I was in service. So when I got out, I went to barber school too. I came out and went to work for her too. So I worked for her for 15 years. And as I was, you know, my kids were growing and they got in their teens. So I needed a little bit more money. I went to her, I says, "I gotta go. I gotta go and do something for myself now." And she convinced me to go in business with her. So we opened up, I got a small business loan from the city or the federal government. and opened up a shop on Green Bay Avenue between Ray and Coke Carter.
Okay.
Yeah.
Stayed.
Go ahead.
Okay. Did you want to continue your family tradition as a barbershop, like the barbershop chain and work ethic? Did you want to continue your family's culture with that, or do you just had a feel for it?
I had a son that went to beauty college, mm-hmm. and he went and got his degree, passed everything, and as he was growing up, he got hooked up with the people with that stuff, mm-hmm. and he started doing that stuff, and I told him I didn't want that in my shop, and he kept on doing it, so now he's 50 years old, got a family, and he wish he had it with, you know how that go. But now he's straight and he's cool.
Okay.
But nobody else in my family wants to do it.
Okay.
None of my other sons.
I heard that your shop was very popular, had a good reputation. I also heard that even Packer players came over there sometimes.
Oh yeah, when we were on, I'm sorry that I didn't. You know, people take advantage of those type of things, use it for advertisement.
Mm-hmm.
And I only have one picture in my barbershop of some of the Green Bay Packers when they were in Vince Lombardi's days, mm-hmm. you know. And I only got one picture of them. And I cut a lot of guys' hair from the Packers, the Bucks, the... Marquette, all the Marquette kids used to come there that played football, basketball there. I wish I had the pictures to show, mm-hmm. but I don't have none.
Okay.
I was young and I thought I was the thing.
Yeah.
So I wasn't interested in them guys. I was interested in them,
mm-hmm.
But I just didn't, you know, think that it had any material value. Yeah.
All right. Back then, I heard everybody's doing well, you know, working, stuff like that, providing for their family when the plants were open. And then the plants all spontaneously just shut down.
Oh, yeah. It started getting slow before then, but when they started redeveloping Milwaukee, they tore down Walnut Street for the expressway. That's where most of the entrepreneurs of black people had their businesses, mm-hmm. between 3rd Street and 11th Street. It was just business, different kind of business. Pool halls, restaurants, taverns, grocery store. It was just nice.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the city came and destroyed that, they destroyed it. Said they was building expressway through, but some of Water Street is nothing but desert land. They still ain't. Right now they just started building some stuff on 6th and 7th Street, mm-hmm. on Warner Street. There's a lot of stuff that ain't never been redone there. And ain't no expressway going through there either. They had it, it was supposed to go through Fond-du-Lac. They were supposed to tear down the Sears building, all that stuff, and go out west. Mm-hmm. Never did.
Do you know why that could be?
I think that it was designed to divide and conquer.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, and it didn't only happen here in Milwaukee. It happened all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Chicago the same way. 63rd Cottage Grove and over there, was a lot of nightclubs and things. And we used to, when I was very young, we used to go over there. Me and my wife, we used to go over there and listen to music, you know, and stay overnight, come back. But all of that's gone. I mean, in the black neighborhood, I don't know. I just think it was designed to divide us. That's what I really think.
Okay. Did the plant closings around the area of your barbershop, did that have any effect on your customer service? Or
yes, it did.
Your work that
when at, after that happened, then they start later on. They started the plant started moving here, moved away. Alice Town was the first one. Alice Town was moved away, but they kept a little stuff there for a while. Then they closed down. And there's a lot of steel mills, a lot of foundries, a lot of those closed down. And every time one of these places would close down, that affected the black neighborhood, because those people weren't working. Those people weren't working anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They had to find other jobs, and those jobs paid the most money. Not hourly wages, but a lot of them paid money on the overtime.
Mm-hmm.
Guys used to come in, I got in 48 hours, I got in 50 hours this week, my check was this and that, you know. And it was good business for barbershops and things, and all black businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And then as the plants started closing, people started going out of business,
mm-hmm.
everything, and it just had a big A.O. Smith, boy, that really hurt.
Mm-hmm.
That really hurt when they went out of business.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people worked there. Yeah.
What did you guys do different in your business and your work ethic to suffice for what was going on with the plant closings going around? Because your business still exists even today. So what did you guys do?
I did a lot of advertising myself, you know. I was one of the first barbers in the city to start doing natural haircuts.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The big ball haircuts.
Yeah.
So that was during the time when they were popular.
Mm-hmm.
And I got into it, and the barbershop that I worked in got into it, and we rolled it out with that. But when people wear their hair long, they don't get haircuts as often.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it balanced itself out. You still made a living, you know. Then after that crave came, then the collegians,
mm-hmm.
those came popular. The waves that the guys have in their hair,
mm-hmm.
they cut it short and they have it waved up, wear stocking caps and murray it down and make the waves show.
Mm-hmm.
So that helped a lot, because they got their hairs cut more often. Guy get his hair cut today and he'll get it lined next week,
mm-hmm.
to keep it sharp, you know. So that helped. It always seemed like some transition would come into barbering,
mm-hmm.
that would make it where you could make still make a living. But like I said, when my kids got about 15, 16, I thought, in the teens, I thought that it was necessary for me to try to get some more money,
mm-hmm.
and be some barbers that work for me, so I could upgrade my finance.
Okay.
And it worked for a while, mm-hmm. you know. And then that's the way it went.
Okay. Were there any unions or protesting that happened as a result of the plant closings, and did you participate in any?
I didn't participate in any plant calls because we didn't have any. We didn't have no ties with the unions and stuff. The city, I think, had a lot to do with that because they started having more environmental things put on the factories. Mm-hmm. Tried to make them upgrade so it wouldn't be so destructive to the environment. Mm-hmm. And I think that hurt a lot. They started moving out. And then that's the only thing that I can see and that hurt anything because vocational school was turning out welders and everything. We had the workforce here is tremendous. You got machinists and everything, and they had the people here to do the work. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of that had to do with the unions and the high wages and the environmental things that happened that made them close. So they start moving out one by one and selling out and just destroyed the city industrial part of Wisconsin. That's what I think.
Was there anything in advertisement before the plant closed, like in the news or anything like that, or newspapers that hint towards the fact that it was going to close? Did you get?
It was a lot of stuff in the paper. Every time one closed, America Motors was a great example of that. When they came over here and they put out that little car, they were doing business tremendous. A lot of people worked there. Close that down. Then the brewery started closing down. Slits closed down. All of that hurt the black neighborhood because it's in the black neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And it was a long time before that the breweries even hired black people. And by the time the breweries started hiring black people, then they closed. Mm-hmm. Something happened. Slits, they said that they... One year they tried to manufacture a beer faster than they had previously, and the people didn't like the taste of it, and they went flat. Mm-hmm. They started losing. And I think when Bob Eli passed away or whatever happened to him, he died, then the family closed it down. Closed that plant down. Then Pabst closed down. Then Miller arose. They became pretty big. And I went to work there too. I worked there for 15 years with Miller Brewing Company. And I think Philip Morris bought it. They started hiring people. And I got in there. Mr. Shropshire was the vice president of the brewery. I started cutting his hair, and he got me in there, and I stayed. I was only going there for 2 years. I ended up staying 23, because it was a good job, and it helped with my family too. Yeah.
You said earlier that you said with your barbershop while the plants were closing during that situation, you said that what you was doing with the new hairstyles and stuff like that was working for a while. Would you like to elaborate on that? Like, what did you have to do after that while was up to, like, keep up with demand? And
by then, I was well established in the city. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people knew me. Mm-hmm. And I still had a good flow of customers. I got two other barbers. And then I had a full shop. I had four at one time. Mm-hmm. So that helped a lot. Then I lost one. He went to Oklahoma, opened up a shop. And I lost another one. He went and opened up his shop in Milwaukee here. And then I had another one that went to Minnesota, and he's doing, all of them are doing good. One of the guys went out of business, he became a preacher. The other guy that went to Oklahoma, he opened up his shop, and he ran it for about 5 or 6, 7, 8 years, and I think he got sick, and he gave it up. The guy that went to Minnesota, he quit barbering altogether and started doing some other things, and he's doing fine, yeah.
During the, when the plant's closed, you know, all these people are out of work and stuff like that, looking for jobs and pretty desperate. Did a lot of people, potential employees, come over and ask, can they have a job at your barbershop specifically as a result of the plant closings, the people that used to work there? Did a lot of people come in and ask, are there any openings here or?
Yeah, we picked up a couple of barbers, but they didn't last long. One guy said, you guys are too good for me. Said, y'all cut too good. I can't make no money here.
Yeah.
He left. And then the processing was in, and we got a guy that did, I never did that, do processing. So he was pretty good, and he stayed, and that helped too. Break in business. You couldn't take on, like, when I worked for Mildred, the barber, her daddy was there, she was there, I was there. There was room for nobody but one other person. So we kept it going, and you know.
When you was in the Air Force, did you take any of those skills you learned or discipline?
I didn't have. Oh, discipline? Discipline?
Mm-hmm. Did you provide?
Oh, that learned me a lot. Mm-hmm. I grew up. I think the Air Force made me a better person mm-hmm. than I would have been had I not went into service. Mm-hmm. It gave me opportunities. Like I said, it sent me to school, learned a trade. We had a federal loan that helped me buy me a home for my kids. Mm-hmm. I probably wouldn't have never been able to do that if I hadn't been in the Air Force. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that helped a lot. I grew up in there. It taught me how to be disciplined, mm-hmm. On time, and endurance. Because you, when you're in the service, you got to go whether you want them.
Mm, exactly.
You can't land the boats and say, I'm sick. you're going to get out of there. You go to the doctor or to the, where they sent you. And if wasn't wrong with you, you go back and get in line and do what you had to do. You know, so, yeah, I learned a lot in the service. I think it made a better person out of me, really, okay. In all aspects.
Mm-hmm. Did you choose to go in the Air Force, or were you, because I heard back then there was a lot of drafts and people.
Well, when I went in service, it used to be the Army Air Force, mm-hmm. And the Air Force was breaking away from the Army, so they were recruiting a lot of people just for the Air Force. So I was fortunate enough to get in the Air Force mm-hmm. because they needed people. And I couldn't pass the test to get in the Air Force now because the Army, the Air Force, the Marines, and everybody, you have to have a little education to get in there. They don't. If you don't have a high school education, I don't think they'll even take you. Now, I'm not sure of that, but I know you have to have some fat on your head to get in the service there. And I didn't have too much fat on my head because I left school in the 10th grade and went in the Air Force.
If the plants were not to close and stayed open, do you think that would things would be better?
Oh, man. It would. If you cannot supply people with jobs, you bring in these other bad things. You get more young kids seeing people with cars and things, and they want them. Mm-hmm. So if they don't have opportunities to get a job, and everybody's not smart, I mean not intellectually smart, they're good with their hands, they can do some things, and if the opportunity is not there and they can't get no jobs to make a decent living, then you're going to have all of these other interjections into society, undesirable interjections into the society that keeps growing and growing. That's how come things are so bad around here now. These kids don't have, and when we were kids, we had social centers, things to do. They don't have nothing to do. There's no social centers, very few. Where I am now, they took down the basketball courts at Garden Homes. And the kids like to play basketball. You take that away, where are they going? Out in the streets. You know, so it's the plants closing. Either the parents of the kids, they have to take lesser jobs, and they dibble and dabble in the things that they probably would never have done, you know, just to try to make a living, you know. I don't know. Life.
You have children, so do you believe that the plant closings had an indirect effect on them, like the next generation? Like you said earlier, kids see people with cars and stuff, and that gives them ambition to go out and do what they gotta do. Did you have to, like, do something different with your children to basically keep them from knowing what's going on in society?
Well, like I said, they got caught up in it, some of it, too. Mm-hmm. My kids did. But after a while, me talking and talking and telling them and talking, they got to be better people. I'm proud of all of them now. They're good citizens of the city. One of my sons is a little pastor of his church. My other son is the deacon in his church. I got one that works for the VA. And the other one, he's the maintenance man. The baby boy had a scholarship to go to Whitewater play football. He went up there and he messed up his shoulder and didn't want to stay in school no more. So he said there was no social life up there. I thought that was ridiculous. You didn't go up there to get for social life. You went to get an education.
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I might have had something to do with that because I didn't get no education and I wanted them to get it, you know, and they saw me doing pretty well without it. But I had a trade, and so they thought they could make it out here. So, you know, they have their bumps and ups and downs, but they survive it.
Despite the plant closings, are you satisfied with the outcome of the way things went in your life with your, you know, work ethic and the way the direction went?
With me, I am I could have did a lot of other things, I think, had I had my head screwed on right. But as it turned out, I'm pleased. I'm pleased. Because I did make a living for my kids, and I have a home for them, and I had the American dream to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, I want the American dream. Well, I had some parts of it. Maybe not all, but I had a piece of it. And I owe it all to my military experience and my mother and father, of course. I had to get in my grandma, my mom, my daddy, my uncles. All of them could beat your butt when you stepped out of line, you know. So all of that. And I can't say I'm satisfied. Because a lot of my friends, they went to jail for obvious reasons, doing that dope and stuff. And I think that 4 years that I was gone, that kept me out of that. And when I came back home, all I wanted to do was get a job and try to make me some money and do good for myself. So I guess that's okay.
As an African-American male, what do you believe is your mission in society or for the next generation for you to do in your life, specifically as African-American?
When I was younger, I did a lot of things. I marched with Brother Groppy for open house, and I was on the board of directors at Northcutt House for about 2 or 3 years. I did mine. Now, all I do is try to be a consultant to the kids that come in my barbershop. Give them good advice, try to give them good advice. Ones that ain't going right, I try to talk to them and tell them you can do better. Mm-hmm. You know, that's all I can do. I'm burnt out. Burnt out. But I any kind of way that I can help without giving too much of me away. I ain't got too much energy to do a lot of things that a lot of people do, but I try to do the best I can and I try to help in any way I can in my little small world.
In your barbershop, you know, you're cutting hair and people telling stories about what's going on in society and stuff and what they experienced yesterday and everything.
Oh, man, we have a lot of that.
Did you hear anything particular about the plant closings? Like, did you hear what effects they have on other African-Americans that came in your shop?
Oh, yeah, it killed them. When, like I said, A.O. Smith and the breweries closed, that killed a lot of people. That took away their livelihoods, you know. And those were good paying jobs. And when you lose those jobs, it's hard to regroup and find other jobs to take their place. Mm-hmm. So these guys, instead of them being progressive, they degressed. Their families degressed. It had effect on the families and everybody, you know. A.O. Smith, by the time Tower took over, if you didn't have enough time in A.O. Smith, you lost a lot. A lot of those people lost their insurance. Mm-hmm. They don't have no insurance. They have to get other kind of insurances and things that ain't good as the regular people that work. The unions couldn't do nothing no more because of the power that the plants had over. And it just papped the same way. Miller had to pick up and give them some insurance just to, I guess, because of the union, I guess. Mm-hmm. And they helped them out. But a lot of those guys over there, they struggling. They still struggling because the plant's closing. Yeah. Guys that have 15, 16, 17 years, they really got messed when Tower came. Mm-hmm. But the guys that had more time in that, they kind of got away pretty good because they were under the A.O. Smith thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What was your customer base like, race-wise? Like, was it just strictly African-Americans came in there, or was it people I go.
I did. All of my customers was black. Mm-hmm. I had a few, maybe, you know, one here, one there, that would come in, but mostly it was black.
You say, yeah, come in one here, one there. Like, when that particular person, like, let's say, like, a person that's not African-American walking there, and they told a story about what happened to plant closings, was their story different in contrast to African-American story? Like, was it as, like you said, they was getting depressed with the situation. Did they have just as a hard time as they did?
We living in a white world. Mm-hmm. And sure, it hurt everybody, but they had a better chance of regrouping than blacks. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's a white world. It's a white world, and you're gonna always, the people on top is always gonna take care of themselves. Mm-hmm. The construction company, take construction for example. When I was young, man, everybody, a lot of people were working construction. Mm-hmm. Black, white, everybody was working. You had foremen, black foremen on the construction job, mm-hmm. especially blacktop. When jobs got scarce and the money was good in construction, right? Mm-hmm. So the neighbors' kids was out of work and daddy's out of work. So what you think? They laid off the blacks and hired the whites. And as they hired the whites, then you see all these big cement mixers and these pavement things that you just, trucks run behind it and dump over into this big thing and it goes down the street. Back and forth, and spread. You cut out a lot of finishers that used to finish. There was guys they called the puttlers. They had one truck come, and when they dump it into the street, then you had three or four guys in the middle of it, shoveling it and throwing it in the spots where there was none. So you had a lot of work, and people did that. Now they come up, and like I said, when the work got scarce, the white people didn't hire black people no more. They started hiring whites. Mm-hmm. Now, you don't take my word for it. Go out there and look at the expressway now and see how many black people you see out there. Very few. Very, very few. White folks then took it all over because it's the money in it. Plus that, they upgraded the machines now. Mm-hmm. You got big machines that's doing work for 10 or 15 people. They put you out of work. Mm-hmm. Now you got construction. It's hard as hell for black people to get in construction. And you have very few contractors that does that work. And then you have to, there's a lot of things you have to bid on. And the bigger you are, the lower you can bid and still make money. If you're small, you can't do that. So you're in a catch-22 there. It's very, I don't know how to say that. They're competitive, very competitive. You really got to be sharp, and you really got to be real sharp and know people. Politics. Mm-hmm. I'll just leave it like that. It's politics, man.
What do you believe strictly is the reason for the plants closing? Do you think it was to serve the elites and have their way with the way money was floating, or do you think it was some sort of like racism, something like that?
I know that you heard of the guy ran for president against Obama, right? What's his name? I can't think of it.
Mitt Romney.
You heard about his the type of things that he did, don't you? He would buy up companies and utilize them until he used them up, and then he sell them off, mm-hmm. and buy up other companies and sell them off. His daddy had American Motors out of here, and American Motors was doing good for a while, and they sold it off. Plants closed. No work. Starve you out. The rich get richer, the poor get poor. The way I see it now, they're trying to make America like the third world countries. They don't want no middle class. They're trying to get rid of the middle class. All they want is rich and poor, rich and poor. And they're doing a pretty good job of it, I think. Mm-hmm. But it's going to get better, I hope.
Even today, there's some areas that's left over for, like, they have open landscape and stuff that's going to be factories in the future. Do you believe what happened back then will repeat itself inevitably, or do you think it'll be different?
Repeat that.
In some areas, like, there's going to be factories built there.
Where you see those small factories?
Like little small factories, exactly. And then they're going to be built there. Do you think what's going to happen, what happened back then, is going to happen again?
If you got a good product and it's going great, mm-hmm. and you servicing it, for example, can companies. We had American Can, you had a lot of can companies. What happened was when Miller came here, they bought a can company, so they controlled the can company. So they worked for the can company. The can company worked for Miller. And they closed they found another way to do that. They quit having a can company, and they got rid of the can company. They found another way to get their material from other places. So there's some more jobs going. Even the little manufacturing companies that come up, they depend on the big companies. So when the big companies will buy them out and make lower wages and everything else. Miller Brewing Company, now if you go down there and you want a job, you're not, when I went there, whatever they were getting, whatever everybody else is getting, that's what you got. And then now you go down there, they got a certain amount of money they're gonna pay you to come in. But then you might get a raise every so often, every 6 months, every year or something. Every time the unions change, they'll give you something or take away something or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it ain't the same no more. Nothing's the same. Mm-hmm. They got robots in there. They got things that then took away a lot of jobs. I think when I was there, over 2,000 people was in the plant. Now, I don't know, but I bet you it's less than half now, mm-hmm. of brewery workers, not up in cooperative, but brewery workers, I'm saying, that really manufacture beer and do all the things to make the beer. I bet it's less than half when I was there. So with technology and all of this, it's depreciating the your worth, a human being's worth. And there's things that they're doing now to take that play, take its place, you know, like computers and people working computers and guys that program the computers and all of that stuff. There's jobs for them, but you got to be educated. Get some, like I said, get some fat on your head. It ain't no room for dummies no more. Ain't no room for dummies. So you just got to get educated, and you need education. But there's a lot of people that's got the education, and now you go to these jobs, they'll tell you, you're overqualified. Have you ever heard that? Mm-hmm. You're overqualified because they don't want to pay you for your worth, or they got enough people in that position that they can't afford to pay. And it'll look bad for them to hire you and pay you less money. Mm-hmm. You know, I know guys that went to school and the jobs just, they got in managerial position and the job just disappeared after a while. They cut that department or that particular manager out of that position and put another person over the position, and he has to go. They gave him some money to go find him another job and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And he went and found another job. They said he was gonna be in the same position that he was in. And he worked there for about a year or two. They put him back on that plane and he was out selling again, like he was a younger person. Like he just got there or something. So I had to take less pay and all of that.
Okay. Earlier you said with the barbershop you had your first African-American female in there. Do you think that attracted more of a female customer base and provide more opportunity for them, made them?
Well, she was the first black, like I said, she was the first barber mm-hmm. in Wisconsin. She was the first woman that ever became a barber. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure that helped her when she started. And plus, like I said, her daddy had a very good name as a barber. Mm-hmm. He worked at this place, Spot Shots on 6th Street. He worked there. That was a very popular barbershop. I went there and got my hair cut when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. So her daddy was cutting hair in there. So when she opened up her shop, he came with her. That brought a lot of his customers there. She being a lady, it brought more people in, mm-hmm. you know, and it grew. So, yeah, that helped.
Okay, I want to question. Why do people call you Monk?
Oh, man, that's a long. My grandma, she was very instrumental in my life, too. Mm-hmm. She made me have responsibility when I was 12, 13 years old. My grandmother was the head of my daddy, my uncles, my whole family. She was the boss. Mm-hmm. And all of them, when they get paid, they brought the money to her. She gave me the money mm-hmm. to go and pay the house note and all of them little old stores that used to be up on Felice Street, the credit stores, Colden stores and stuff. So she gave me the money to go pay them. I went into that to tell you that she was the one that named me Monk. she was the first black women that they used to, she was a preacher. Mm-hmm. She was a preacher. An evangelist preacher, I'd just say. Because at that time, they didn't, Baptist people didn't allow, didn't want no black, didn't want no women in their pulpit. And the church that I went to, they allowed my grandma to preach one day out of the month. I forgot what day it was. But anyway, when I was a little bit of boy, she used to read these books, detective books about Monk, this guy. And he must have been a real tough guy or something. So she started calling me old bad monk. And it just grew from that, and then everybody started calling me, and the family called me Monk. Mm-hmm. After I got going to school, they called me Monk. And half of the kids that I went to school with now don't really know my real name. Some of the teachers at Roosevelt Junior High School would call me Monk instead of my real name. Mm-hmm. That's how crazy that is. And kids I went to school with right now, if you say, you know William Campbell? They'll say, no. You know a guy named Monk? Oh, I know Monk. Mm-hmm. But my name, it don't mean nothing. It's Monk. So after all of that, my shop is called Monk's Barbershop. Mm-hmm. I just kept the name.
You said a lot of people became preachers back then after the plant closings. Do you believe in the African American community that the?
I didn't say that. I did not say that.
Well, there was like.
I said my grandma was the first woman preacher mm-hmm. that was allowed to preach in this one church that we belong to, mm-hmm. Friendship Missionary Baptist Church. Was started on 9th and Fleet. I can't tell you the name of the preacher that started the church. But then we moved from there across the street, on the other side of the street. Mm-hmm. And she, like I said, she was a minister. She was a minister. She didn't have a church, but she, occasionally there she would preach at other churches, but at Friendship Missionary Baptist Church they will allow her to preach one Sunday out of the month. Mm-hmm. And then the church changed and another preacher took over after mm-hmm. Reverend Williams died. Reverend Hughes took the church and he didn't allow no women in his pulpit, so my grandma left that church. Mm-hmm. I was in service when that happened. So, but yeah, I didn't say people went to being preachers. Mm-hmm. She just happened to be a minister. Okay. Yeah.
Do you believe churches and African American community help African Americans in particular cope with what was going on with the plant closings and giving them some sort of remission and faith-based like hope to let them know that things will be all right and they'll be able to recover from this?
Religion, if religion has always played a big part in black people's lives, so far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. When I was young, I had to go to church, Sunday school. I was in junior choir, so every time that the junior choir sang at 11 o'clock, I had to be at church. Mm-hmm. And then I had a little time left on Sunday to go to the movie, the Regal Theater. And I had to get out of there by 5 o'clock so I could get back to BTU. Mm-hmm. So yeah. And when I was a kid, Reverend Morris he was sanctified. And he had a program that used to come on at 11 or 12 o'clock at night. Now, my grandma would let me go up there to that church. They would be on the radio. And we'd go go up there and sit up there, and when the service was over, the sanctified people shouted and stuff, and we got a kick out of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But religion is always part of black people's lives. You catch the biggest sinner in the world, he's gonna get up on Sunday and go to church right now. And they talking about this little thing that happened down there in Carolina. You know how those people didn't raise no sand and all of that. That was terrible when the people went into that church. That boy went in that church and shot those people. Church has always been a savior for black people. We pray. We are very faith-minded people as a whole. Very much so. Very much. And not only today, but in the history of black people. That's part of their foundation. Mm-hmm. Is the church. Everything derived from the church. I always say we got more religion than anybody in the world. We suffer the most. It's funny, but that's the truth.
Yeah. Well, that's all I have for you today, Mr. Roy. I have no more questions.
You have no more questions.
Nope. Well, thanks for your time, Mr. Kimball.
I appreciate talking to you, brother. It was nice.